Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. We salute some of the top teams in the Eastern Conference, and then we talk about the teams, the coaches, the players that we are most grateful for during this holiday season. A lot of shout outs to dole out, and just a general salute to basketball. So we hope you enjoy the holidays. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, good morning. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thanks for embracing your bounce. Ready to talk some hoop.
All right, well, let's talk some hoop indeed. We're going to roam the baseline. I will zoom out and first say a lot to be thankful for this week. And so we're going to have a thankful theme on this episode of The Dunker Spot. It's going to be mostly positivity. So just want to give you the warning before we get into this. But first, we're going to roam the baseline, talk about some teams that have impressed us as of late. And it feels fitting to talk about the teams that are still streaking at the moment, Steve, in the Eastern Conference, the Detroit Pistons, a team you in particular have enjoyed quite a bit. Franchise record, 13 straight wins right now. Overall this season, eighth in offense, second in defense, fifth in net rating per clean the glass. That's removing garbage time. But one of the handful of teams in the NBA right now, they're top 10 in offense and defense. The defense has been very strong. We have talked quite a bit about how good Cade Cunningham has been this season. Welcome back, Cade Cunningham, by the way. And how good Jalen Duren has been, because good Lord, what a leap it's been for him on both ends of the floor. But the drives are hitting, just the self-creation reps in general have been fun. So because we've talked about this somewhat recently, I just want to quickly hit on the role guys that have stepped up as Cade's missed some time, Jalen Duren's missed some time, Jaden Ivey just now making his debut not too long ago, Tobias Harris is now back, etc. A lot of guys have stepped up in the midst of these injuries and have helped maintain this win streak for the Detroit Pistons. So very quickly, Steve, Danish Jenkins has brought me so much joy on the basketball court this year. Summer League legend Danish Jenkins. But in all seriousness, the blend of shot making and playmaking from him has helped keep this Detroit offense afloat, an offense afloat, an offense that we've talked about in the half court in relation to Cade and some of the attention that he was drawing and some of the traps and some of the doubles he was getting. We had the conversation about what is that going to look like if teams continue to send him that amount of pressure. But watching Danis come in, either in aid of Cade Cunningham when he was missing time or when him coming off the bench with that second unit, and just taking charge of the offense, his craft inside the arc pops. Again, the three-point shot making has been there for him. He has made some really fun passes and has put some fun passes on film. Lobs, skips, lay-down passes on drives. The defense has been pesky. Since the last time we talked about him a couple of weeks ago, 14.8 points, 6.8 assists, a little over a steal per game during the six-game run. Just wanted to shout him out very quickly. But I'll pause there, Steve. Do you have stronger belief in the Pistons at this point? Is this just the best team in the East?
I mean, I don't think it matters how much my belief is. It matters how much their belief is. And every time you see them play, you see that kind of just leak out. I think the 13-game win streak, this being the franchise record streak or tying it, is pretty amazing. You got to think about that. 2 years ago, they were building one of the longest losing streaks that we've seen ever in life. And I believe almost 2 years to the day, they lost in that same building in Indiana. And now they're tying the streak there. It's pretty interesting. But I think the mindset is what stands out to me. Cade, after that Indiana win, saying, hey, we just want to be the best version of ourselves. And tonight was not the best version of us. So I'm not happy about that. Okay, this is interesting. JB Bickerstaff saying, hey, defense is our identity. We need to hammer that home. We can't let up. Well, you know, the mindset has to be we can't ever feel full or satisfied. You see that when you watch them play. And now you understand how things are kind of piecing together. And so this is a team that has buy-in, that has belief. They have accountability. When the players are doing that, that team can go all sorts of places that you may not have thought of. And they're getting healthier. And so you see Tobias Harris returning. You see Duncan Robinson continuing to play pretty well. And you see the balance of their lineups. You know, much ado about a 12-man rotation, that's more just an opportunity. It's early in the season. A lot of guys filled in and earned themselves another opportunity, but that'll normalize and stabilize. And you'd see more contributions from Caris LeVert as he gets healthier. So I think this is a team that everyone knows what they're supposed to do. Everyone's bought in and believes. Physical on defense. Are you a player who would like to drive in the paint? There will be another jersey next to you. Are you a big that's rolling in the paint? There will be two hands put on you. Like, it's a tag. Mm-hmm. It's a real tag. It's not I'm here. No, I'm putting my paws on you, and then we're going to recover. So that balance, being able to do that consistently, I think that's where it gets fun.
I think to that end, Steve, do you think we'll see, if possible, more teams lean into the early season 11-man rotation, 12-man rotation, just because of how strenuous the season is? There's been lots of conversations about, you know, the rise in soft tissue injuries and just general maintenance with where the game is right now in terms of the pace and the space and things like that. Do you think we'll see more teams kind of adopt this OKC Detroit type style?
OKC Detroit type style. This has been happening since 2000, and this is basketball, baby. Early OKC, get out of here. I mean, early in the season is the opportunity to have an extended rotation. So whether it's 10, 11, 12, 12 is very hard to manage. So usually it's like 10, 11. Guys get an opportunity early in the season to see, and they either earn their minutes in camp or preseason, or they get an opportunity because of the vision. It's a little tougher now because everything's a little more concise as far as the preseason in camp goes. But yeah, it's always been one of those things where our rotation is expanded and we're going to shorten as the season goes on. I truly think you should lean on your depth a little bit more and get those guys going and have them in good position later on in the season, especially if you're pushing towards the playoffs. I know I get yelled at for that, but that's just me. I'm not against all bench lineups. Let's get our team right and let's work together and protect our stars a little bit. To the OKC portion, they specifically they're not afraid to expand their rotation whenever. And so you wonder how many teams are going to be able to have that level of lineup versatility to be able to tap different buttons during different games, different matchups. And that's probably the question that I'd be intrigued in as far as being able to have a system or being able to have an identity that allows guys to know, okay, maybe you didn't play for 2 games, but now we need you. You're back in for this specific reason.
I got you. Like, it certainly feels like there's going to be more value placed on like in the bench sounds kind of derogatory, but I don't mean it that way. Just more so like we need more guys that can provide regular season value for us. We can get through. And to your overall point, kind of expanding our options in terms of lineup versatility and the things you can kind of mix and match with. So it's been fun watching the Pistons during this stretch. You already talked about the defense and how physical and active they are. It's funny kind of looking at some of the basic stats with Detroit during this run. And obviously this kind of thing varies because of who's been in and out and when they've been out and things like that. But they have 10 guys averaging at least 10 points per game since the last time we talked about them.
Balance.
That's not, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's not a thing that's supposed to happen or that we usually see. And even with that, like, Asar is at 8.3 during this stretch. Ron Hall's at 5.2. And I don't even think you want more offensive production from them. You want more shooting from Ron Hall. He's on a bit of a slump right now. But like, with what those two are doing defensively, it's not like they're not being impactful in their minutes because they're not scoring 10. Asar can defend and hound just about anyone. Ron Holland, oh boy, I think over 2 steals per game during the stretch if you want a basic box score number, but just in general, his physicality, his screen navigation, if there's a loose ball, he is getting it, and if you get mad at him, he's going to get mad at you, and we're going to jaw for a little bit. He's going to hold that for the rest of the game. So just like the collective energy and toughness that he brings, like, it's been fun to watch this group fly around, and when those guys are out, here comes Javonte Green. I'll crash the offensive glass if necessary. I'll set a bunch of screens. Here's some random cuts. I'll defend a little bit of everyone if you need me to. You talked about what Karis and Duncan are doing already. And like watching Jaden Ivey now recently start to fit back into this. I'll be the secondary guy. I can still knock down threes. Going to keep an eye on what the drives look like. Going to keep an eye on what the floaters look like for him. But it's just been fun watching the Pistons turn it around to this degree. So I wanted to salute them again because they deserve it. 15-2. As of recording, if they're not firmly the best team in the East, at the very least, they have the best record in the East with a little bit of a gap. So they deserve some praise. Steve, who has caught your eye as of late?
Let's talk about the Miami Heat.
Okay.
They have won 5 straight games as of recording. They've won 8 of their last 10 games. And I think overall, they've been a team I've kept an eye on. A lot of talk about the newer offense, the lack of screens, and I understand that. But this is a team that is playing with confidence when you watch them. They're playing with a level of consistency. And that's probably been one of the more important parts for me, just kind of watching things develop. play like a team that knows who they are, knows who they want to be, and can win at times some different type of games. So, you know, do you want to get into a shootout? Or we can do that. You want to get into a rock fight on the second night of a back-to-back with some of our guys up? Sure, why not? We can get that done. The return of Tyler Hero. He's here. He's back. He can play within the system. We can put that discourse in the bag with the fries and get it out of here. He looked comfortable within what the Heat are trying to do. And so this is a team, obviously, that we know wants to get up and down the floor. They want to drive and drive and drive and drive and kick and drive again. And Tyler Hero helps add to that, gives them another piece in transition so they can get to a throw ahead, or he can get to a throw ahead. You can mix him in off ball. So some of the actions we've seen for Norman Powell where he's getting a pin down or a stagger, you use that for Tyler Hero. He gets that screen. You got a big rolling with an empty side. That's going to cause some help. That's pretty fun. It did sure feel like a lot of Tyler Hero floaters.
Yes.
In his return. But in theory, between him and Norm Powell, you're going to need someone to who can go get a bucket at times, especially against teams who have size, who have length, and are a little bit more prepared for the driving kick. It's been an interesting concept for me as I've watched Miami. They do such a good job of spacing, and they do a good job of cutting and clearing space. And so you're not sure, you know, hey, if this empty side is going to be a quick attack, is it going to be a swing? Like, they just kind of keep you off balance. And the funny part is you see some defenses that they're not locked in on a random night. You start over-helping, and now Miami is just getting what they want. You know, they start a drive. You try and show help at the nail at that free throw line area. It's a kick. Now it's another drive or a shot. Opens things up. It's almost like they're tapping on it. Hey, we know you guys over-help. We're just going to do stuff until you do it and we find it opening. So that's been real fun for them. But I just like the totality of their roster. I can speak. It's fine. I've liked the totality of the roster. Like, Norman Powell has been lights out. Have you looked at his first quarter numbers, by the way?
I feel like I saw a tweet from one Steve Jones Jr. about Norman Powell knocking down over 50% of his first quarter threes this year.
Man, shooting over 50% from three in the first quarter. He just gets it done in transition with the pull-ups, in the half court with the pull-ups. Davion Mitchell getting downhill. He's been key. And, you know, he gets paint touches. He mixes in some makes. He wins against closeouts. That's been great.
Khalil Ware, huh, guys? There we go.
Khalil Ware. It's very interesting to see Spo be like, yeah, he's playing with intention. He's playing with purpose. Meanwhile, it's just like, hey, last five games, 16.6 points, 15.6 rebounds, 1.4 blocks, one steal, shooting 52% from the field and 50% from three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he's doing the right things. I understand. I understand. How have you appreciated the Khalil Ware experience, the guys?
I'm glad that you brought it up, because I was going to bring up the stats. You mentioned his last five. That is coincidentally after, I think it was the NBA Cup loss to the New York Knicks. A lot of offensive rebounds for Mitchell Robinson.
Oh, when Udonis Haslam sent the text?
Yeah, Udonis Haslam was like, hey, nah. I texted him. I said, I need you to get that film of Mitchell Robinson and what he did and the early work that he did and how he had you underneath the basket so you couldn't get rebounds. And UD said, Khalil told him, you're absolutely right. I'm going to watch that, and it's not going to happen again. And you just like, hey, we're going to see. They get him again on Monday. Let's see what we got. And oh boy, 16 and 14 in that Knicks game, six offensive rebounds for Khalil Ware. And you just mentioned the overall five game stats for him. So the intention stands out. And I think the fact that we have seen a much lower volume of the Khalil's just kind of loafing possessions. He got beat. He doesn't feel like he recovered. We just live to see the next possession type possessions. We're seeing more multiple efforts. Like, it's similar to like a comment I made about Cam Thomas not too long ago, or over the offseason, where it's just like his first efforts feel better. We want to see more consistent second efforts, et cetera. For Khalil, it feels like both the first and the second efforts have gotten better now. And I think those are the kind of little things that Spo appreciates and has been hammering home since training camp, to put it kindly. But then you just see him grab out of area rebounds. You see the lob radius that he has. That's really added a level of juice to these Miami drives, especially with how he'll dive, roam around the short corner area or whatever. And now, even if you don't cleanly win your drive, you can't just toss it up to Khalil Ware if there is, to your point, Steve, that kind of overhelp. We're supposed to rotate and shut this down if we can. You just toss that thing at the corner of the backboard. Here comes big Khalil Ware. You sprinkle in some of the trail threes on top of this, a little bit more consistency defensively. He still gets moved a little bit, can get a little hunty with some of the blocks, but on a per possession basis, it feels better. And if this is who he's going to be, or if this is going to be like his new kind of baseline level of effort and just the little things and the nuance that he has, this is when we start getting excited about the upside. Like, oh, wait, what if he is going to be like 35% for 3-on-4 attempts? Like, what if he settles in on that with the roles and some of the lob opportunities that he has? Like, this is kind of the Khalil where they want to see Steve.
This is a contrast from how Nikai spoke about Khalil earlier. So I'm happy about this. This is very good.
I just want to see it.
And another thing I'm happy about, Jaime Jaquez Jr.
He keeps doing this, Steve.
Your favorite old person's basketball player. If it's not, you need to show him the tape. Because he's bringing it back to the old school. Hey, buddy, the drives have been fun, but let's talk about these post-ups. Let's talk about this post work. Let's talk about clearing a side. Let me turn to a side. Let me back you down. Hit first real quick. See how you react. I get to my spot and fade right over you. And if that doesn't work, I might hit you with a spin move next time. And if I run in transition and I got someone small on me, I'm going right to the block. I'm going to get the ball. I'm going to see what I can do. That post work to me has stood out because that helps on those nights where teams are able to stay in front of those drives. That's significant because they need his scoring off the bench to boost that second unit who just goes out there and plays like almost it's pickup, like it's noon ball. Like they're there every Friday on the dot, and you don't know that they do this until you're down 8-0 within the first like 2 minutes. And it's insane. I just enjoyed how they fit. Think about this. The Miami Heat have played so well. I didn't mention Bam Adebayo yet. The defense has been there consistently. And it's funny to see people kind of knocking on the door of Bam Adebayo, Defensive Player of the Year. I see y'all. But I give a salute to the Heat. I am keeping an eye on how this develops against different teams who do have more size, who do have more length, who are able to keep the ball in front and protect the rim and protect the paint and make it a little bit uneasy. But so far, so good.
Well, just quickly to bounce off of the Bam Defoy thing, Steve, because he has been one of the best defenders in basketball for quite some time, particularly when he's healthy. He is anchoring, as of recording, the third best defense in the NBA, and I think still the best half-court defense in the NBA, which is a surprise to me considering what OKC and Detroit have been able to put together this year. But for Bam specifically, a shade under 0.9 points per possession allowed when he's attacked in pick and roll. That's 11th among high-volume pick and roll defenders. He leads the NBA in switches. That's back. Trying to attack Bam in isolation has just not been a fruitful endeavor for folks. He has put a lot of stars in the blender during this win streak for Miami in particular. So if he plays enough, he did have the stretch where he missed some time. So we're going to have to keep an eye on that in terms of games played stuff, as we do with all candidates. But this feels like as good a year as any for Bam Adebayo to get that kind of hardware. Like on a baseline level, he has just been good enough. And this team defense has been good enough. But then even the backdrop of Wemby is still out and he's the favorite for a whole lot of people. Like Chet missed some time earlier and now he's really ramped things up. So it's going to be a competition still. But hey, man, Bam deserves his respect. He's deserved it for a long time. You've been on that train. I've been on that train. This Heat season, it's funny that it took the offense getting better and thus winning more games for the defense to fight more for more people. But got to do what you got to do.
Wemby coming. Who else you got, Nikai?
Well, Steve, mentioned the Detroit Pistons. Have not lost a game since we had a segment on them a couple weeks ago. You spearheaded that one. On that same episode, Steve, I hit a quick PSA on keeping eyes on the Toronto Raptors. I think they had won like 4 of their last 5 during that stretch, et cetera. They also have not lost since that episode. 8-0 since we last talked about them. Overall this year, 5th in offense, 4th in defense, 4th in net rating. Them and the Thunder, the only teams in the top 5 in offensive and defensive rating per clean the glass. Go ahead. I see you raising your hand.
Can I raise my hand very quickly? Because sure. You say 8-0 since the last time we talked about them. And I believe we have talked about them for 4 consecutive episodes. They have played very well, but I do believe that we have talked about them every single episode since you delivered that PSA.
Well, so here's the thing. Since we had a specific like Raptors team segment, I guess it's the easy one. Because to your point, like we did talk about like Scotty Barnes, all-star stuff, Brandon Ingram, all-star stuff. We had Colin Murray Boyles during the rookie report. So like that is fair. Like the Raptors have been mentioned. But as far as the overall concept, you know, it's been a couple weeks. No, they keep winning. Like,
I'm going to swing the ball right back, but you forget, like, you mentioned them and then you get excited and talk. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
You know, it's okay. Well, since we have already talked about Toronto Raptors, I'll just sprinkle it again. Top 5 in both offense and defense. Brandon Ingram continues to make every mid-range jumper he tosses up. And like watching some of these post touches from him as of late, it's not new that he can get buckets in the middle of the floor. But watching how teams have reacted to those and the playmaking out of that, Brandon Ingram deserves his credit for making those reads, and the Raptors continuing to punish tilted defenses. I've also just kind of like, wait, do we need to send this high volume of double teams towards Brandon Ingram with the shots that he's taking? I do wonder at what point that's going to dial down a bit, and it's going to have to be like, well, surely he's not going to continue to make what feels like 70% of his mid-range jumpers. But either way, the passing has been very good. The passing has been quick. And again, the Raptors around him have done a good job of punishing those looks with the cuts, with the catch-and-shoot opportunities. And so I want to salute Brandon Ingram.
Well, just to stick right there to add to it, I do believe this is where you salute Toronto for mixing in some of the matchup hunting and getting some matchups for Brandon Ingram, whether it's via cross screen, trying to get a smaller guard to see if they'll switch, get him a touch, force the defense to make a decision on top of his shot making. So I'm glad that blend is starting to hit to a high degree, because his ability to work in the post, make tough shots, you can live with those until you can't. Never forget that with these scorers. It feels, we'll live with that. We'll live with that. Fourth quarter doesn't feel as good. They got 28 points, doesn't feel as good. And now that's opening things up. So, salute to Brandon Ingram.
No, that's fair. Coming off the 37-point performance on Monday, where lots of bucket getting was had, a lot of early catch-and-shoot threes, then that turns into mid-range shots, that turns into drives. It's just like, okay, here's the entire Brandon Ingram mix. In addition to, we're going to double some of these touches, and now you can't deal with that either. So that part's been fun. I've talked about what Scottie Barnes has done this year. He's been flying around defensively, filling gaps offensively. He's been a monster in transition. Emmanuel Quickly, a guy very early on in the season, I think during one of our watch parties, I was like, hey, I need Emmanuel Quickly to decide who he wants to be in Toronto. Like, the point of attack defense can't be this. And if you're also not making shots, then it is a small guard that is getting dinged on both ends, and it can't be that for Toronto. Over the last 8 games, Steve, shade under 17 points per game, 66% on twos. The floaters seem to be back. 42% from three on over 7 attempts. Shooting well off the catch. Getting busy on pull-ups. If you play any kind of drop on him in transition, if you don't match up with him early enough, he's going to pull there too. 83 from the line, if you care about that. Doesn't get to the line that often, but it's cool to see. 5 boards. He juices some of these transition attacks with the way that he swoops in. Nearly 6 assists a game. He just feels more comfortable on both ends. The defense still isn't perfect. You still want to see more consistency at the point of attack. Screens can really ding him. But the effort seems better. The effort to work back into plays when he does get clipped feels better. And that, in conjunction with the overall activity and size that Toronto's defense has, it's made it a more holistic approach there. And offensively, again, he's back to making shots inside and outside the arc. So it's just good to see him turn things around to the degree that he has. And the last thing I want to say, the Mamu season, Steve. The Mamu season has been such a joy. He's long been one of my favorite, like, role player fringe bigs, because, like, guys his size aren't supposed to be able to handle and pass and drive with the funky cadence that he has, et cetera. And he has been fully unleashed with this Toronto second unit. With him and Scottie Barnes on the floor together, you don't know who's bringing it up, who's doing the hub stuff, who's driving. It's a whole lot of fun. He's knocking down threes early in the game last night, where he back-to-back corner threes. He's flowing into the little hop before he takes the shot. He's just feeling it early. He just provides a level of energy that I appreciate. And what surprised me, as someone that generally enjoys Mamu, he has held up defensively a lot better than I anticipated.
Yeah.
He's never been god-awful, but he could be dinged in space. This version of him, where he's at the level containing, if it turns into a late switch, I can hold for a couple of beats and funnel a drive or just flat out contain it. I assuredly want that to hold up as we get into December and January, et cetera, et cetera. But he's just been good defensively so far, Steve. And that is such a fun bonus on top of the offensive stuff that I was already anticipating. And so I just wanted to give the shout there. I wanted to come in with, like, some legit 6-man of the year propaganda, but it's like, well, Jaime's still doing the thing. You know, AJ Mitchell has technically come off the bench in more games than he started, and his reserve numbers are still very good. If you want to toss that in there, Steven Adams, who is just the world's greatest offensive rebounder, he's been very impactful. Like, there are still a lot of guys. I do believe Mamu's name deserves to be in the conversation at the very least. I can't get all the way to, like, front runner, unfortunately, but he has been good. And then Jamal Shedd with the second unit. Jamal Shedd, I think, leading all reserves in assists per game off the bench. But just wanted to give some quick salutes. The Raptors keep winning. Second in the Eastern Conference right now behind those Detroit Pistons. That's all I got.
Understood. And speaking of winning, you keep winning with us. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more of the Dunker Spot after this.
And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. And as we get ready to post up, Steve, it feels appropriate to talk about some things and some teams that we're grateful for. So I will give you the floor. What are you grateful for this basketball season?
I'm grateful for all the dunkers that have supported us this year. I hope you and your families are all well. And if not, you know you're not alone. I'm grateful for you, Nikias, and all the fine folks at the Yahoo Sports Network. And I'm grateful for quality basketball. Because let me tell you, folks, we have seen some really high-quality hoops early in the season. Salute to the NBA Cup. But, I mean, the compete level is high. Maybe that's because the Western Conference is the Western Conference and it's just nasty to deal with all these great teams trying to do good things. Maybe it's the Thunder forcing everyone to raise their game to a high level. Maybe it's the Eastern Conference being wide open to a degree. But on a nightly basis, you are seeing teams get after it to a high degree. You're seeing ebbs and flows. You're seeing highs and lows. You're seeing really quality hoops. And we're getting to that part of the year where you're starting to gain an understanding for who these teams are and what they're trying to do and what they do well. And with that comes other teams understanding that and saying, hey, let's not let you do some of this. Let's not let you be who you are. Let's rev things up defensively and make sure we put ourselves in a strong position to just make you look different. You see that back and forth start to build, which is important as you get closer to the All-Star break. So I'm just glad to see some of the classic games that we've seen, some of the classic performances that we've seen. You don't know what you're going to get every single night, but you know you're going to get something. So I just want to salute everyone in the league for putting this together. It's been a fun time.
No, I'm right there with you. Just to quickly echo your sentiments, this has been one of my favorite starts to an NBA season in some time. And I don't want to say that like I've watched like 45 seasons of basketball, something like that. But like we've had so many overtime thrillers and game winners and just competitive basketball games, like even some of the blowouts, if we want to get into like the OKC of it all, like the way that they get to their up 20 now has been really enjoyable basketball. So I appreciate the product as well. I appreciate you, Steve. I try to tell you this pretty often as we talk pretty much every day in some capacity, whether it's the pod or the online Dunker Spot watch parties, which link still in the podcast description if you want to rock with us and watch some hoops with us, et cetera. Quick plug there. But I have gotten to learn so much about basketball talking to you over these past few years, even before the pod officially started. And so I never want to lose sight of the fact that you have been very influential in the way that I see basketball and ultimately love basketball. So I want to give you your flowers here, Steve. I appreciate you, Big Dog.
Thanks.
Thank you for being you. Thank you for being you.
Appreciate it.
There we go. But I say on the actual NBA side for me, I actually do want to stick with the Thunder very quickly.
Okay.
Because when they decide we tripping or y'all are playing too well, it is just, that was a late team to happen in the third quarter. It's like, you know what? Actually, you're not going to have fun with this anymore. That freaking Kings game a few days ago, or it's just like, oh, so that what is going on here? OKC can't knock down shots. The Kings are hitting everything. The drives are hitting in the way that you don't expect. And we're just flipping this game on its head. We actually do not care anymore. I think the Utah Jazz assembled a bit. Like, actually, no. We're just going to flip this in a singular quarter. Do you know what the OKC Thunder's second half net rating is, Steve?
Plus 24.
Not quite, but that wouldn't surprise me either. Just on the season, plus 17.1. It's not supposed to be that. Like, we've kind of alluded to, as we've talked about Shea in particular in his MVP case, like, he's not playing fourth quarters. And so you would think they had the big third quarter surge in, like, in the fourth quarter kind of ways because they're not playing the guys. Yada, yada. It's like, no, because, like, you sub out the starters and then you still got to deal with, like, Chris Youngblood. It just varies about Jalen Williams will still like take charges and stuff. Like, you're never really having fun in Thunder games, even when they flip it on its head and it's effectively done. But they just rev things up defensively to such a high degree. It's turnover into miss shot into turnover into miss shot into consecutive turnovers. And now all of a sudden it's a 17-0 run or something ridiculous. And you don't know why you're even on the court with them. They're just a joy to watch. So I'm grateful for the Thunder and their we're done here sequences.
I bet Shea is as well. That brother's played, what, like three fourth quarters this month? Is that the bit?
Yeah, that's kind of nuts. Not even kind of, it just is.
While still producing at such a high level. So I definitely understand that shout. It's a good one. I am grateful, sticking with OKC, for teams that are just playing with an identity.
Okay.
I think it's one of the most important things to have for a basketball team, to know who you are every single night and strive to do that every single night. And guys buy into it. Guys understand it. Guys start preaching it. That's where you start to get like some of the best possible version of success when the players take the onus. We talk about OKC. They know exactly who they are. Mark Dadnall has coached them up into a high level. They work to build their muscle. They work to flex their muscle. They're a machine. But behind them, even if you look at the Western Conference, Denver is a team that knows who they are. Obviously going through some injuries, but they are connected and they are communicating on both ends of the floor more times than not. And they understand what they have to do defensively. They're trying to find different things defensively to get themselves to a higher level offensively. Unselfish, move the ball, we do what we do. Houston Rockets, hey, we're gonna crash the glass. We're gonna play defense. We're not gonna be the fastest of all time, but we have Kevin Durant, we have Alperen Şengün, we have Amen Thompson. This is what we do. And if you are ready to deal with it, that's fine. Let's fight. If not, we're gonna go ahead and come in here and beat you up. The Pistons, physical. Go watch some Pistons tape. They are putting hands on people. I guarantee you, if Detroit keeps winning, you are gonna see people talk about all they do is foul. No, they just physically defend you. The Raptors connected on both ends. The Lakers. Trying to build them. JJ Redick would very much like for them to build championship habits. But you can see there's a little bit more belief in that. And so the Spurs being able to plug and play without Wemby, you go down the list. Mm-hmm. And even some of these hybrid teams, especially in the Eastern Conference, where it's like, okay, we probably need to be better offensively. Defense isn't where it should be, but like in Orlando or like a Boston. On a right night, you never know what you're going to get against them. So that's just been fun to kind of watch these teams figure out who they are.
I like that. And to circle back to one of the teams that we mentioned a little bit earlier, talk about things that we're grateful for. I will put the hat on very quickly. Thank goodness the Miami Heat are just fun this year.
Uh-oh.
They have a fun offense, Steve. A relatively good one, 11th in offensive rating as I'm recording, and the half-court offense has been good. But just fun. For long-term dunkers, you notice, but for people who are new to the show, grew up a Heat fan. And so I have seen a lot of iterations of Miami Heat basketball. Shaq and Wade, very good. Shaq and Wade championship. Immediately gets embarrassed by Chicago. Everybody get hurt. Team stinks. Dwayne Wade puts up this ridiculous 08-09 season, which I can still just recite off the top of my head. I should not be able to do that, but that's okay. Couple playoff battles, Atlanta, Boston. We get to the big three era. I've just seen a lot. And even when the Heat are good, it's very rare that at least offensively they are consistently fun and consistently enjoyable to watch. And so this season has been such a breath of fresh air for me watching them and being able to analyze them. There's a lot been made, as Steve alluded to earlier, about, you know, the removal of pick and rolls, which very quickly, Steve, you know how many pick and rolls Miami ran in the Tyler Hero debut?
Not a one.
12. That would have been funny. The Miami, for the first time ever, zero lob pick and roll, but no, they lobbed 12. In this game. Tyler Hero lob 2. And it was very funny to hear them kind of allude to, yeah, I think we're going to need some more ball screens at some point. But like, I'm just trying to fit in right now. So I am keeping an eye on what that's going to look like in a couple weeks.
Since we're here, the funniest part of the debut was when early in the game, when he was pushing it up and kind of waiting for a big to set a drag screen for him early, and there was no big coming. And so he just kind of crossed over and reject like there was one. And it was funny.
I think he got to one of those floaters, if I remember correctly, a floater or a pull-up. It's like, yeah, it's going to take a little bit of time. So we're going to see what that balance ends up being. But yeah, it's been a lot of Heat basketball in my day, Steve. And I am enjoying the Davion and the Jaime and the Norm Powell and Bam and this version of Khalil. And it's just feels good. It's not always perfect. There's certainly still pockets of games where I'm like, hey, what is this? But by and large, this has been a very enjoyable experience. So I just want to salute the Miami Heat on that front.
Very good. I hope this is not like Thanksgiving when insert relative gets too excited about their team that is playing on that day. Anyways, that to me, I would just like to give a salute to alternate courts. I love alternate courts. I like alternate jerseys. I like when they match. I think it's fun. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think more teams should embrace it. Specifically, you, Portland, please figure out a way to make a court that matches your airplane jerseys. I beg of you. But we've got, you know, the Wolves, Prince jerseys. Like, there's a lot of fun stuff out there, and it's just nice to see. I know the cup courts, some people don't enjoy them, but hey, it's a Friday. Let's have some fun. So that's been fun for me.
Okay. So you mean to tell me you don't like red court with like black and green jersey? That doesn't do it for you?
No.
Okay. Let the quiet know. It's not going to do it. But no, I respect it. While we're still on teams, I put in my notes, shout out to the Phoenix Suns and their pursuit of annoyance. We had a full-blown episode with the great Stephen Prejean Garner breaking out everything they were doing on both ends of the floor. So check that out for deeper actual analysis. But it's mostly baked into their defense. They're just always there. Even when they get beat, they're still there. They're still present. There's still going to be some kind of chest-to-chest conversation between an opponent player and a Phoenix Sun because of some of the physical on or off-ball defense or a battle underneath for a rebound, battle for a loose ball. There's always going to be something. And, like, I appreciate teams that make you feel them, even if they're not good. And the Suns have largely been good this season, so I don't want to put them in that bucket. But, like, even when teams aren't good, like, to your identity point, Steve, this is who we are. This is what we want to be. This is what we want to accomplish every night. The Suns, in addition to the scheme stuff, just being like, we are going to be ever-present no matter what. If it's not Dylan Brooks, it's going to be Colin Gillespie. If it's not Colin Gillespie, it's going to be Grayson Allen when he's healthy. If it's not going to be Grayson Allen, it's going to be Ryan Dunn. If it's not going to be Ryan Dunn, it's going to be Jordan Goodwin. If it's not going to be Jordan Goodwin, it's going to, you know, it just keeps going and going. And so I just really appreciate that portion of the program for the Phoenix Suns. So wanted to give them a quick shout there. Back to you, Steve.
I just want to give a quick salute to top teams winning games on the road. Bring that back. OKC 9-1, Denver 7-2, Lakers 8-2, Rockets 6-2, Pistons 7-1, Raptors 7-3. Very funny bit with the Atlanta Hawks, by the way. They are 8-3 on the road this year.
Yeah, the home games have been kind of.
They are 3-4 at home.
Yes.
So incredibly funny there. But I like the old school mentality. We're going to your house. We're going to win and we're going to have a fun flight home.
Okay. I like it. While we're in the Western Conference for me, I know what the offensive rating is. It's bottom 10 in the league. I understand. But stylistically, I just like watching the Utah Jazz offense, Steve. I just appreciate where they place their bigs, the actions they can run off of those things, the volume of off-ball screens and the variety of screens and screening locations they can get into. It's helped the breakout year of Keontae George, for one. The breakout year of Lauri Markkanen, who just continues to light it up, et cetera. But again, back to your identity point, like, this is what we want to do. You can tell this is how we are going to win if we win. I think Will Hardy establishing a foundation offensively and, as I've talked about before, being willing to tinker things defensively. This is going to be the switch all year. Okay, this is going to be the super aggressive year. Like, we'll just do different things and figure out what works with the personnel that we have. But the offense just sings schematically. And I just appreciate that portion. So I want to get a quick hit to Utah. Around the play-in picture, because of what the bottom of the West has been, I don't think they want to actually make the play-in this year for hashtag reasons. But they are currently there. They're in that range as of this recording. And a lot of that has been the offense. So wanted to give the quick salute.
Well, I'm going to skip my last point because I am incredibly thankful that finally in the year 2025, I've gotten Nekias Duncan to appreciate a team featuring Yusuf Nurkic and Kevin Love as bigs. I did it.
You know who also appreciated Kevin Love? Luka Doncic. As he, but anyway.
All right, man.
I'll go quick hitter then. For me, last two things I wanted to hit on. The Orlando Magic Is This Anything segment always gets a chuckle out of me.
You love that one.
It's so funny. You just get the pose and then random stat. Like recently in the game, you're talking about what was it? They make like 18 free throws without a miss in the second quarter of a game. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, who even thinks to? Huh? But it's just like stat plus pose, arms crossed. We got the we thinking sometimes. It's very fun for me. I always get a chuckle when I'm watching Magic games either live or like day after stuff. I just wanted to give them the hat tip there. And then Antonio Daniels and Joel Myers, their chemistry on the broadcast is pristine. So we can both acknowledge that this hasn't been the best season for the New Orleans Pelicans as a whole, though there have been bright spots. Shout out to the rookie, shout out Trey, et cetera. But like Antonio Daniels, like his energy when trying to explain a basketball thing always pops on the broadcast for me. And Joel Myers, like it's just the perfect contrast of voices because his AD ramped up over something that he liked or he's like, what are they doing out there? And Joel Myers is here all the time. And then you get into some of the sarcastic back and forth between those two. It warms the heart as much as it can for what the season has been for the Pelicans, but it's been fun stuff. And on the broadcast, I mean, just shout out Eric Collins, just as a concept. And I think that's where I cap it there. Lots of things to be thankful for on the basketball side, but that's where I go with team-based stuff at the moment.
Well, I mean, a lot of quality work going around the league with the local broadcast crews. Shout out to Brooklyn, shout out to Miami. Shout out to Memphis. Shout out to Portland.
There you go.
Been some good stuff. I'm a big fan of the in-arena entertainment matching games or tic-tac-toe. Very funny bit.
the tic-tac-toe, it stresses me out. It's like make a shot, place your card, and then you get missed layup and it's like, oh no. Or you just see like in real time, the person panics. It's like, he's going to put this somewhere. And it's like, big dog, why did you do that? That didn't block a move for your opponent, or they didn't put you in position to win. You just did the thing. Like, please. I know it's a high stress environment, but please. Don't like that. But it is fun. Shout out to Baby Races as well. I like the shout there. But in the meantime, we're going to take yet another break. And when we return, we're going to talk about some players that we're grateful for. And I'm going to try not to be emotional. Smile emoji. And we are back here to discuss some players that we are thankful for. Recent stretches of games, some fun plays, whatever the case may be. And I felt it appropriate to start with Chris Paul. I am incredibly grateful for Chris Paul, the basketball player, who I guess we knew heading into the year or had a very strong inkling that this was going to be his last season. And then ahead of the Clippers matchup with the Charlotte Hornets on Saturday, we get a post from Chris Paul, I think it's his Instagram and just different social areas where he kind of alluded to, I'm grateful for this game in North Carolina, going to be my last one. It's just like, oh, so I guess this is like officially going to be it then. And then we get the Shams Charania tweet that Chris Paul is indeed going to retire at the end of the season. And so I think it is fair to say likely not going to be an all-star this year, likely not going to be all NBA this year based on what the season has been. So if this is going to be the end of the run, 12-time all-star, 11-time all-NBA, 9-time all defense. He should just have an MVP award. That 07-08 season is one, and that MVP decision is one I'm just never going to forgive. I'm sorry. All due respect to my Laker pals, but that was Chris Paul's. But for people that have been here for a while, whether with the pod or just following my writing journey and stuff, like, you know, Tracy McGrady is my favorite player of all time. Very close on that list for me is Chris Paul. Watching him diagnose teams on both ends of the floor for as long as he's been able to do it, and with the stature that he has, it's not supposed to happen to this degree. It's not supposed to happen with this volume. It's not supposed to happen with this longevity. Like, small guard careers are generally pretty perilous after a little bit. And, you know, a lot of people thought, including myself, towards the end of the Houston run, he's not healthy. He's not moving the same way. Like, this may be the beginning of like the sharp downturn that we normally see from veteran small guards under 6'1", et cetera. And then he has the OKC season. And then he has the Phoenix run. And it just keeps going into his brain is still a supercomputer. He can still make every pass in the book. He's still automatic from the elbow area. And like, just watching this dude play basketball for as long as he has defied so many expectations, especially for me, for what he's been able to do. But at the peak of his powers, there wasn't anything he couldn't do. He could score just about everyone. There's still a YouTube video floating out there of him, I think, tip slam over Dwight Howard when his knees still worked to the high degree in his early years. And he was just a gamer. He found every edge you could think of, annoyingly so for a lot of people. He knew the rule books better than some referees, I would imagine. But like, for a guy that cared about winning that much, and would look to find literally every edge that he could to win basketball games, this is a thing that I respect. in addition to just the overall skill set, one of the best passers ever, one of the best on-guard defenders, especially around that size range that we've ever seen. There was a stretch of time where he had, if not more steals than turnovers, then very close to that. And that is absurd to put that kind of collective two-way thing together. And so I just want to salute Chris Paul. I have a lot of thoughts, but like just on a baseline level, this is one of the best players we've ever seen.
Tremendous career for Chris Paul. And it was dangerous when he would just lurk and make plays and make reads. And all of a sudden, I'm going to shoot the basketball based on the data that I've collected, and we're going to win this game. And he taught me some incredible lessons when I worked in Memphis, and he was a Clipper. And I remember sitting, doing playoff prep, and recognizing very quickly, boy, this is going to come down to if we can guard Chris Paul in pick and roll. And I had to deal with that for two consecutive years. That was fun. And then one of the first times I was out on the second row on the bench, Chris Paul looked at the sideline, and one of the coaches was trying to get the play called, called out. And he said, a play call. And the coach was like, it's pick and roll, it's pick and roll. He smiled. It's not pick and roll. It was veer action, which is a fake of a pick and roll into a pin down. It resulted in a lob. And that is when I knew I need to know my bleep.
Oh, no.
So, yeah. Yay, trauma.
Well, darn. Okay, well, we're going to move past that specific era of Chris Paul. Can I go back to 07-08 very quickly?
Why?
I just, for the people that aren't aware of what that year was for Chris Paul, I don't say it lightly that I think he should have won MVP that year. But in that season, a little over 21 points per game, 52% on twos, 37% on threes, 85% from the line, 11.6 assists per game, led the league, only 2.5 turnovers, 2.7 steals per game, only 2.3 fouls. And then you get to the playoffs and it's 24-5-11 for him. And there just wasn't a darn thing that anybody could do with him. Like, just watching inside the arc pick and roll him and David West is like, what do? You switch, he's going to bank your big. You play drop, he's going to pull up or just sprinkle in pocket passes. You're not putting two on the ball against him. It was just basketball nirvana for me, watching that man operate in the half court. And so incredible run for him. And so, again, I'll leave it there. I don't want to turn this to a Chris Paul pod, but I want to salute Chris Paul. Steve, any players you want to shout out?
Just want to salute James Harden. Still doing it. Deserves the respect. Averaging 33.6, 7.6 assists, and 6.9 rebounds over his last 8 games. Only Clipper in team history to record those averages over 8 games.
Wow.
So, as he said, basketball is life. Salute to him.
Okay, I like it. While we're on ball handlers, quick salute to Jalen Brunson. Career high scoring season for him, 55% on twos, 37% on threes, 86% from the line, getting to the line a good bit, 28.3 points per game. Kind of want to talk about the passing from Jalen Brunson. It's not a career high for him in terms of assists per game, but like watching how quickly he's processing things as a passer has been a pleasant, I want to say surprise, but like a pleasant bonus of this Knicks season, at least offensively. The defense, we will talk about that on a later pod. They miss OG Anunoby. We will just leave it there. But the offense has been very good for the New York Knicks. Jalen Brunson has been very good, but he's processing things quicker as a passer. The chemistry between him and Mitchell Robinson, and just in general, his willingness to toss some of these lobs as he gets inside the arc has been a fun one. Now, again, not going to confuse him with Luka Doncic or anything, but he's already thrown 8 lobs, or at least 8 lobs that have ended in shot attempts or dunk attempts this year. He logged 17 all of last regular season. We're at 8 before Thanksgiving. Just a small note, but like something that is popping on film for me, in addition to just the bucket getting that we're used to with Jalen Brunson. So I wanted to give him the salute on that point. Cause like, the Knicks media contingent and like the Knicks content creator contingent is very good. And so I'm not going to say like literally no one's ever talked about it because I know it has been, but I at least want to use my platform to also say, hey man, he's grown as a playmaker and that feels important for this Knicks team. Just wanted to salute him there.
I just want to quickly say we should just enjoy the fact that we get to watch Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant and LeBron James still play at a high level. Mm-hmm. So I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, I like that. Quickly for me, Keegan Murray, welcome back. Also, Keegan Murray drives, just keeping an eye on it, a whole lot of drives against the Minnesota Timberwolves. on Monday night. But just in general, we know he's going to shoot. We know he's going to be tasked with defending high-level offensive options. Anything that he provides is a conversation we've had before, Steve, but anything he provides off the bounce, you know, I just want to see exploration from there. I'm keeping an eye on the drives of Keegan Murray, but in terms of the joy index for me watching the Kings, which big win last night against the Minnesota Timberwolves, fun finish there. I'm glad that Keegan is back to add to the young mix and things like that. So I wanted to give a quick shout out to Keegan Murray. Max Christie, want to give him a shout. As so much noise, and rightfully so, around the trade was, well, Luka Doncic is now doing this in L.A., and frustration around Anthony Davis and hope that he's going to be healthy and remain healthy, et cetera. Max Christie just quietly career high in scoring, shooting 48% from three on solid volume, and, like, at least trying to defend his tail off. I think he is overmatched in some of the matchups that he's been tasked with. But overall, competing hard on that end, just the off-ball value that he's provided in general, I think has been good for this Dallas group. It's been a bright spot for me watching their games. And so, like, I just want to say, like, Max Christie, we see you. We see you. And finally, just to nudge Steve a little bit. So Aaron Holiday with the Houston Rockets, about 12 minutes a game, 7 points per game, shooting 48% from three. It's pretty darn good. Double-digit scoring in four of his last five games, and he's coming off of a season-high 22 points. Dating back to our division preview that we did with Houston, it immediately became a bit of a meme when we got to the lineup portion, which is like, hey, what lineup do you think is going to perform the best, whatever? What's the lineup you want to see? I thought that Houston's best lineup with, like, you know, minimum 50 minutes, 75 minutes, whatever you want to put on it, was going to include Aaron Holiday. The actual lineup that I listed with Aaron, Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, Kevin Durant, Alperen Şengün hasn't logged them in it yet. So probably going to end up taking the L on that portion. But I would like to say the Rockets have outscored teams by 37 points in Aaron Holiday's minutes, and it's nearly a plus 17 net rating with him on the floor. He has been helpful for them. And so I just want to say, Aaron Holiday, I see you as well.
I wanted to talk about Wemby or Jokic and what they do night to night, but after that, I'm getting up from the Thanksgiving table and I'm going to go to a different room. That's what I'm going to do. How does one take an L while doing a victory lap? I don't understand the concept. So I'm going to say we take a Jet 2 Holiday and hit the horns.
Huh. I think you can acknowledge being wrong on something while also saluting the overall play. I don't think that's got to be mutually exclusive. But you know what, Steve? I'll go. The horns. Well, all right. Thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel if you haven't already. We're here every Tuesday and every Friday. We'll once again say, for the episode that's dropping later in the week, if you have basketball questions for us, NBA, WNBA, Unrivaled, anything of the sort, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com or leave a comment on the YouTube channel. We'll get to those questions. We got a mailbag episode coming up next, so send those in. And with that, we will catch y'all later. Enjoy the holidays.